Welcome to another episode of Piecing It Together, the podcast where we take a look at a new movie and try to figure out what movies inspired it. And today on the show, we are talking about the religious horror film Immaculate, starring Sydney Sweeney. This is just a wild movie, and I had so much fun talking about it. Joining me is film critic Eric Langberg. We get into a lot of great puzzle pieces on this one. Some obvious ones, but some out there ones as well. So that's coming up here in a second. Before we get to it, I do want to remind you, as always, to make sure you are subscribed to Piecing It Together wherever you listen to podcasts. You can follow us on social media at Piecing Pod and join our Facebook group, Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces, where we continue the conversation about all the movies we talk about here on the show. Last but not least, at the time of this recording, I have a whole bunch of new episodes recorded and on the way, and you can get early access to them and exclusive video versions of some of them over on our Produced by David Rosen Patreon. It is patreon.com/bydavidrosen, where I post bonus and advanced content for Piecing It Together, Awesome Movie Year, and my music career. Lots of great stuff over there. I appreciate you being out there just listening, but if you want to support the show, starting at $3 a month, you get exclusive access to all of that material. So check it out, and let's talk about Immaculate. All right, Eric Langberg is back with us. We are going to talk about Immaculate and get into some good, wholesome fun here with this one. Eric, how are you doing?
I'm great. How are you? Happy to be back.
Yeah, thanks so much for joining me. I'm doing great, and it's been a good little rush of movies. I've liked a lot of stuff I've watched recently, so, you know, the movies are back, as they say. Yeah, so I'm excited. You know, getting into this movie, Immaculate, let's start off with, are you a Sydney Sweeney fan? Were you excited for this one?
Yeah, I actually had the opportunity to interview her a couple of years ago and chose not to take it because the movie that she was promoting at the time I didn't like. It was called Clementine, and she played like a high schooler.
I never even saw that.
She like gets involved with this older woman. I didn't really love it. I thought she was she was good, but I hadn't watched Euphoria. I didn't really know her, so I chose not to interview her. And I'm kicking myself for it now because everything I've seen since that movie, I have really enjoyed. Give or take a Madame Web, but that's not her fault.
yeah. Well, team Madame Web over here. But I also have not seen Euphoria, actually. Have you seen it since then?
Because, I have not, like, no. I only know her movie stuff.
Yeah. That's funny. Two people who, you know, the only two people maybe that haven't seen Euphoria, talking about a Sydney Sweeney movie. But yeah, this is going to be a fun one to get into. I do think that we'll have some overlap with our puzzle pieces. I think there's some obvious stuff to get into, but maybe a few out there ones as well. But let's just start diving right in. What do you have for your first puzzle piece?
So my very first one is maybe a little out there, but I went with Scream because, you know, two people who haven't seen Euphoria, but I am a big fan of The White Lotus, which Sydney was great on the first season. Second season, I loved Simona Tabasco, and I was very excited to see what she was going to do next. Her name is on a poster. She's in the trailer for Immaculate, but she's the nun who gets killed off in the first, like, 3 minutes of the movie.
Sure,
she's been, like, doing the promotional rounds and everything. She's playing those, like, viral video games with, you know, Sydney Sweeney, but she's not really in it very much. So I went with Scream just for a star being killed off in the opening minutes. Even though she's not, you know, she's not on the level of Drew Barrymore.
But yeah, we do get the great little cold open there, which sets the tone for everything. And, you know, a classic horror movie staple. But, you know, you got to get that famous person. I mean, you know, famous person.
Famous,
you know,
relatively speaking.
Quotes but there. Yeah, relative. But yeah, absolutely. Great thing to kick us off with. I'll go with one that's like probably one of the obvious ones here. I'm going to go with Midsommar, the Ari Aster film. You know, as far as this person being brought into this new culture, I mean, she was, you know, in the church and everything back in America, but being brought into this actual Italian, you know, what do you call it, a monastery or, you know, whatever it is, convent, there you go. And the whole culture shock of everything that she has to put up with, and the questioning constantly from the beginning and right up until the end of, you know, are these people like on my side? Do they, you know, want to do bad things? Do they want to do good things? You know, what are the intentions here? in even like right up to the very end, still being uncertain, but having to survive anyway, because, right. you know, everything is going to complete batshit craziness. So, yeah, I think that there's a lot of parallels there to the main character's journey. And then, of course, you do have the Crown of Flowers, which you could totally make a, you know, a comparison to as well.
Certainly. Yep. That's a good one. Both vehicles for really strong female lead performances.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, let's go to your next one. What do you got next?
Up next, I have A Cure for Wellness, the Gore Verbinski movie from, you know, 2016, maybe 2017.
Sure.
Love that movie. And the reason why I thought of it was because the third act of that movie, as with Immaculate, goes full like Hammer horror, like mad scientist lab kind of thing. Like there's this descent into like the bowels of the commune where both characters are staying in that movie, yeah. And this one. And we realize that there's all sorts of like scientific experimentation mumbo jumbo going on.
Sure.
And this character that we thought we trusted is really like a, you know, like I said, a mad scientist, completely lost his mind, doing things with, you know, forced implantation and really, you know, violating body horror stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, that is a fun one. I was thinking about it as well. I didn't include it on my list though, so I'm glad you did. I'll jump right on top of that and bring up one I was going to bring up later, but it goes right along with that. I'm going to go with Alien Resurrection, the fourth Alien movie. As far as just mad scientists playing God and like, you know, spoiler alert for, you know, this movie, Immaculate, you know, we always get into spoilers here, but once the big reveal comes that they're essentially trying to use science and DNA mm-hmm. of Jesus to implant a baby that is going to carry on the bloodline, and you get all these like failed attempts in jars,
right.
And it's just pure gonzo, you know, classic horror. And that's one of the fun things about Alien Resurrection, even if it's probably the worst Alien movie. You know, it definitely goes for broke, and I love that about it. And I just love the idea of using Alien Resurrection as a puzzle piece here, mainly because mm-hmm. of the title, Resurrection. And, you know, there's plenty of mad scientist movies, but it is a resurrection here of Jesus. So I definitely wanted to include it on my list.
I like that. That's probably the Alien movie I think I've only ever seen once. I've certainly mm-hmm. rewatched the rest of them, but that's the one I know the least. So
it's ridiculous.
Go back and check that out again. Is that the...
Absolutely.
Who directed that one?
The guy that did Amelie.
The French guy, right?
Yeah, the French guy. Yeah, I can't think of his name, but
Jean-Pierre,
exactly.
Something. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. It's wild. It's wild. What do you got for your next piece?
I guess keeping up with the religious aspect, got to include some nunsploitation here. So the one I picked out was Paul Verhoeven's Benedetta from 2021. Mm-hmm. I loved that movie. I wish that I had been able to see it in theaters, but that mm-hmm. was a pandemic release, so that was a laptop movie for me. But that features a nun at a convent, I think actually like in the 1700s or something, but she begins having these like ecstatic religious visions and becomes kind of venerated among the commune as like a prophet, essentially. And there were scenes in Immaculate that reminded me of that, especially where they sort of dress Sydney Sweeney up in that like Virgin Mary kind of thing and put her on the altar in front of everybody. Just that idea of being part of the group and then being thrust into a position where everybody is worshiping you in unsettling ways.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. And that goes back to Midsommar as well. Like that connection could be made there too. I actually still have not seen Benedetta. It's a movie that's been so high on my watch list, but it's funny you mentioned not getting to see it in the theater. I just was so bummed about not getting to see it in the theater that I haven't wanted to go back to it. And so I'm sure one day I'll cave and just watch it at home. But
it's also, I really want to see like it. This. It kind of leans into the sleaziness of nuns.
Sure.
That one is a little more straightforwardly sapphic. But you know, scantily clad nuns in their nightgowns running around these old ruins of a monastery.
Absolutely. I'll stick in the nunsploitation, you know, vein here. Even though I think this movie, as much as I really, really liked it, I don't think it goes far enough into what we would really typically call nunsploitation, but I do want to include Ken Russell's The Devils as a puzzle piece here, mainly because not so much the nun aspect of it, although you certainly could go there with one of the great crazy nun performances of all time. But my big takeaway from finally actually last year for the first time watching The Devils was, you know, Ken Russell is combining religion bad and government bad. And when you combine those, it's really bad, you know? Whereas here, it's religion bad and science bad. And you combine those and it gets really, really bad. So it's just a different kind of equation, I guess, to what you can add into religious fanaticism. And I also think that Ken Russell would love Immaculate. I think it's like, would be totally his shit. He'd love Sydney Sweeney. He would love this director, Michael Mohan. And I think he'd be really into what they're doing in this movie.
Love that. Yep.
So what do you got next?
Up next feels like cheating a little bit because I'm not sure that I would have thought of this myself. But when I saw Immaculate, I attended an early screening and the director was there. And he sort of rattled off a list of comps before the movie started. And one of them was Barbarian from a couple of years ago. And there's sort of a superficial thing, right, where both movies sort of end up in the tunnels underneath the main setting.
Sure.
But I think there's a formalist thing going on, too. Barbarian is very, like, it finds a lot of its scares in the very intentional way that the camera moves around the hallways, like, the constantly, like, reframing or panning over to an important piece of information or, you know, lingering for a while on the creepiness of an open door, that kind of thing. And I see a lot of that in Immaculate too. There's a lot of very intentional long camera takes sort of following the characters around the convent. I'm thinking about where she's walking and we see the one nun up in the window and then we see her fall and then the camera sort of tracks her across the courtyard to go down and look at that like really grotesque gore effect of the body on the ground.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It does a really interesting thing that I think some of the best recent horror movies have been doing because we're so inundated with jump scares lately in these horror movies.
And there's certainly a lot of those in this. But
yeah, it does have them. It does have them. But a lot of the times where you think, oh, here comes the jump scare, it's not that. And so it definitely plays with expectations in that same way I think Barbarian did.
Definitely. Yep.
Yeah. When she first went into the catacombs, like I literally out loud in the theater said, hell yeah. I was so excited.
Love it.
I was like, here we go. I will go with, I had to include it on the list, Jurassic Park, because in Jurassic Park, we're using dino DNA, and here we're using Jesus DNA, cutting off the ends of nails from the crucifixion to clone Jesus, which is genius. It's amazing. It's so good. No notes whatsoever. What a great idea. No wonder Sydney Sweeney saw this script and just, you know, fought for it to get made for 10 years. It's just absolutely just bonkers and ridiculous.
It's an idea you don't forget. It sticks with you.
Yes, exactly. So I know it's a ridiculous comparison to make, but I think it fits really well. So
no, I love that. That actually crossed my mind earlier when you were talking about Alien Resurrection, right, using science.
Absolutely, absolutely. Love it. What do you got next?
I guess my last one is one that I expected us to maybe have some overlap on, which is Rosemary's Baby. I think makes this movie feel relevant right now, considering the tenor of, you know, anti-abortion laws around the country, sort of forced birth kind of thing. And Rosemary's Baby, I guess, is the classic example of that, of a woman being forced to carry a child against her will that turns out to have demonic undertones. Even if it's not necessarily a demon, or we don't know, it's just the very idea of being forced to carry a child is upsetting.
Yeah,
and I think this picks up a lot of that, just feeling completely powerless against the will of the older people around you.
Yeah, absolutely, and specifically religious older people. Right. But I think it's a, you know, a clear influence on this movie, you know, from the get-go. I would also throw in The Ninth Gate a little bit, you know, to get a little double dose of Polanski in here.
I'm not familiar with that one.
Oh, it's, you know, religious horror and all the iconography and the secret tunnels and boobs, totally. You know, so yeah, you get all that involved. But yeah, it's a great one, but yeah, Rosemary's Baby absolutely has to be on the list. And I also had it on mine as well. And yeah, I think it's a perfect timing, you know, after last year with Roe v. Wade, it's a perfect timing for a movie like this to come back out. So yeah, definitely have that on the list. I've got two more. So first of all, Suspiria, both the original and the remake. I mean, you've got some giallo influence in here with the shots and the lighting we're already talking about, with the jumps, the anti-jump scares. We got like a lot of those like cool shots and stuff like that. You also have all these women in a closed, confined space and none of them trust one another. So I think you get a lot of Suspiria in there. And then the other one, as far as this being, you know, Neon took a chance on this movie and put it in a lot of theaters, and it's paying off. We're recording this just as, you know, news came out that it's Neon's biggest release ever with 5.4 million, I think, opening weekend. Didn't work out so well for Mother, Darren Aronofsky's Mother.
But I almost put that on my list. Yep.
Yeah, as far as like unleashing just you know, sacrilegious, you know, you know, total takedown of religion on, you know, mass audiences, I do think it's a, you know, it's an important puzzle piece to include here. And as much as I love that movie, it obviously flopped pretty hard in the theaters. You know, Jennifer Lawrence is great, but I guess she doesn't have that Sydney Sweeney juice, you know, so I don't know.
Yeah, I always say that Mother, as far as I'm concerned, should have been Jennifer Lawrence's Oscar, but instead she got Razzie nominated for it. I don't know.
Nonsense. Pure nonsense.
Ridiculous. But Mother is a good one, too. I almost put it on my list because it both have, both Mother and Immaculate have very memorable baby killing moments.
Yes. Yes, that absolutely. Where
that newborn is passed along the crowd and they eat it.
Ugh. Yes.
Haunting. And of lots course, of baby the killing. Final shot of Immaculate is one for the ages, I think. Just
100%.
I could not believe how long that shot went on. And she just commands, like Mother, I think she's doing a lot of work in close up in this movie. Which always impresses me. That's I've written about this a lot. One of my favorite things in watching a movie is just seeing somebody in close up and getting to watch, you know, micro expressions and all the, you can see their thoughts in a close up sometimes. Yeah. And, Sydney Sweeney's phenomenal in this, in close up.
Absolutely. I don't want to oversell it too much, but like, do you think that this is the best she's ever been in a movie? Cause I feel like it is.
I think so. Yeah. Certainly the best I've ever seen. I haven't seen Reality, but.
Okay. She's good in that. Yeah, definitely.
Definitely. This is my favorite performance of hers so far.
Yeah, that ending is fantastic. And it's like you kind of think that that's what she's going to do, but then you kind of also don't think they'll go there.
Went there. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Amazing stuff. Amazing.
I loved the energy in the theater as that was going on. It's like, are they going to do it? Are they going to do it? Oh my God, they're going to do it.
Hell yeah. Well, I'll read down our list of puzzle pieces and we'll get into some closing thoughts for Immaculate. We talked about Scream, Midsommar, A Cure for Wellness, Alien Resurrection, Benedetta, The Devils, Barbarian, Jurassic Park, Rosemary's Baby, and The Ninth Gate, Suspiria, and Mother. I don't even know what else to say. Like, this movie, it was wild and it was really fun. And it doesn't necessarily do that much new with the genre, but it's just a great time, honestly. And also, you know, you don't see stuff come out that is so critical of religion this often. Yes. And it's funny where this weekend we're seeing all this stuff, you know, from right wings that's like already going nuts about it. It's going to be fun to watch for the next couple of weeks as that continues to blow up. And, you know, there's nothing you can do.
I love that Neon is just slapping those tweets on posters for social media. It's such a great marketing tool.
Amazing. Yes, that is the way to go. That is the way to go. I want to shout out a very specific moment that, you know, it just kind of sealed the deal on my 4-star Letterboxd review when the water breaks and she says, God damn it. Uh-huh. Chef's kiss. Amazing. Excellent. Good stuff. Yeah. Any closing thoughts? Anything we didn't get into here?
I'd love to. I guess I would just close with a recommendation for Michael Mohan's other film with Sydney Sweeney, The Voyeurs.
Oh, yeah.
I really appreciate both of these movies because I guess the Paul Verhoeven connection is a good one there, because he's not afraid to lean into the sleaziness of, I'm trying to figure out how to say this, of having a star like Sydney Sweeney, who, you know, in this moment, she's kind of like the avatar for all sorts of weird, like, Puritan sexual exploitation versus empowerment. Like, all those conversations are happening around her, and Michael Mohan knows how to use her in a way that's, like, not afraid to show off her body, but also making it clear that, like, you know, you're allowed to enjoy it, but he wants you to think about it a little bit too.
Yeah.
In really fun ways. So more directors who are not afraid of sleaze, please.
Yes, absolutely. We need more of that. And I mean, when you look at, like, people who truly love movies, when you look at their favorite directors, they all are people who celebrate that kind of stuff. Right? You know what I mean? So why don't we have more of these filmmakers doing this kind of stuff? You know, we really should. I hope that their collaborations continue, and I hope that they get crazier and crazier each time, because The Voyeurs was very fun. And, I that was my biggest takeaway from that movie back then, was that, like, somebody's actually going for it. And, you know, these two should continue to go for it.
Yeah, I guess she's the one who attached him to Immaculate, so I guess she must enjoy working with him. So hopefully they figure something out again.
Absolutely. Well, you already mentioned The Voyeurs, but do you have another movie you'd like to recommend to our listeners, something recent?
Ooh, yeah, actually. So Snack Shack came out.
Oh, I want to see that.
A couple weeks ago, just very small. Like, there was only like one showtime at my local AMC, but I loved it. It's the director of Dinner in America from a couple years ago with Kyle Gallner, which I loved. And then this one has Gabriel LaBelle, the kid from The Fablemans. And he and his friend open up the Snack Shack at the pool for the summer. And it's kind of a, you know, raunchy teen sex comedy, but really smart and very endearing too. There's a lot of emotion in it, in a kind of fun, like, coming of age throwback teen movie kind of way. Highly recommend seeking it out. I'm sure it'll be on streaming soon, because it doesn't seem to have lasted long in theaters.
Yeah, I think that's going to be one that I'm going to kick myself for having not seen in the theater.
Yeah, but I wanted to go back, but it was already gone. So,
oh, damn. Well, Eric, tell people where they can find you and your writing.
Yeah, my writing is online at everythingsinteresting.press, or I'm on Twitter, unfortunately, still at Mr. E. Anders.
Right on. Well, thank you for coming back to the show, and hopefully we'll get you back again sometime.
Sounds great. Anytime.
I'm Josh Bell.
And I'm Jason Harrison. We co-host a podcast called Awesome Movie Year.
Each season, we take a look back at an awesome year for movies, which is every year.
We deep dive into these specific years, and we pick out why they were such great years for films. We go over the biggest hits, the biggest flops, the best picture, some personal picks, some cult classics.
Years we've covered in past seasons include 1994, 2003, 1977, and 1984, and we've got all of film history to look forward to. So check us out at awesomemovieyear.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
All right, so I hope you enjoyed that conversation about Immaculate. Thank you to Eric for joining me on that one, and thank you to all of you for listening. If you're not already actually subscribed, if you're just, like, hit play on a random episode right now, make sure you're subscribed. And while you're at it, you could drop us a 5-star rating and review. That would be very helpful to make sure that more people check out the show and we'll be able to do more awesome stuff with it. So please do that. And also, you can follow us on social media at Piecing Pod and join our Facebook group, Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces, where we continue the conversation about all the movies we talk about here on the show. Also, in all those places, you could get in touch with me and let me know, did you think of any puzzle pieces that we didn't talk about on this episode on Immaculate? If you have any, please send them in. I will read them on the next trailer episode, and I love hearing from you, and I love hearing the connections that everybody makes. So get in touch. Maybe even we'll get you on an episode one of these days. So I told you about the Patreon at the top of the show. I'm not going to do that again, but I will remind you it's patreon.com/bydavidrosen if you're interested in signing up. But I will close this out with a piece of music like I always do. And I have a perfect fit for this one. I'm currently doing this 24 for 2024 series where I'm releasing a new single on the first and third Friday of every month of the year. And it is a crazy ambitious thing to put out 24 new songs, and these are all, like, some of my favorite stuff I've put out. It's not like just throwaways or B-sides or anything like that. Full-on new songs, and I just didn't want to do an album format with these, so 24 singles, first and third Friday of every month. Anyway, later on, I think it's in the summertime, there is a song coming out called Falling for Faith. And it feels like a perfect fit for Immaculate. I'm sure I'll probably play it on the First Omen next month too. But yeah, this is a preview of one of the 24 for 2024 songs. Personally, one of my favorite of the 24 for 2024 songs. So I hope you enjoy it. Like I said, it'll be out, I believe, this summer. I forget exactly where on the schedule, the first and third Friday of every month of the year that I have this one coming out, but you get to hear it right now. So I hope you enjoy Falling for Faith. Check out the rest of the 24 for 2024 playlist over on Spotify. There's a link in the show notes, and we'll be back with more Piecing It Together real soon.
Points West production, produced by David Rosen in Las Vegas.